Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Squawker Talker Women's Football Podcast, and we're at the 10th episode already. You know, it's been a good 10 weeks and, you know, we're going to keep going. I'm one of your hosts, Harry Edwards, and I'm joined as always by Mariam Naz. Mariam, how are you doing this week?
I'm a little like all over the place really after what's gone on in the weekend in the Champions League, so I'm sitting here with my trusty cuddly bear, Jungle Squog, and just kind of holding on for dear life because... Oh, so much has happened. It's just so much to take in.
Yeah, let's not waste any time and get straight into it. There's only really one place to start, and that's the Champions League semi-finals. And, you know, being an England-based podcast, we'll obviously start at King's Meadow, where Chelsea beat Bayern Munich 4-1 and 5-3 on aggregate to overturn a first-leg deficit and reach the Champions League final for the first time. Remember in last week's pod, we were, you know, not, I wouldn't say worried, but quite apprehensive given how well Bayern nullified Chelsea. But they, you know, they switched to a four-player defence rather than five at the back last weekend. And, you know, that really allowed Chelsea to thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. And the introduction of Neim Charles, who once again has been thrown into one of the biggest games of the season, I think that kind of told us a lot about how Emery's viewed the first leg. We know she learns a lot from first legs and that she's able to react and sort of tweak her side to respond to that. There was an issue, obviously, down the flanks in that first leg against Bayern Munich, who were getting a lot of joy. And we mentioned about the protection that John Anderson wasn't getting. So the introduction of Neim Charles to add a pace then, to add a player who's able to drive possession up the field, that was interesting. And then again, the midfield as well. To have the three in midfield. And I think she knew that she couldn't allow Bayern Munich to transition in the counter-attack so easily because that's where they were getting their joy from. So it was nice to see how Emma Hayes perceived that first leg and then to see all the changes that came on. And then as a result, obviously, how much it opened the attack because there was so much space with the likes of Fran Kirby and Sam Kerr. They were pretty much out-Bayerning Bayern, really.
Yeah, like you said, I think it was a big call for Hayes to leave out Anderson. You know, she hasn't been at her best that we've seen her this season in the past few weeks. But I think when I was looking at the Chelsea squad, you know, we know that Neve Charles can come in at right back, but I never really saw her as a left back. So I didn't think that there was, you know, a replacement for Anderson. But obviously Hayes put the faith in Charles and, you know, Charles was brilliant for, you know, I'd say most of the game because she did tire out towards the end just because of how much work she had to do. But that was a, you know, a gutsy call. But as we've learned over the years from Emma Hayes, it was the right call. And again, like I said, the midfield, Ingle being able to be in the midfield because Eriksen was back, you know, that helped Chelsea control the midfield. And again, like we've said in the past couple of pods, that midfield has been lacking in the past few weeks. You know, they haven't been able to control the games and Kirby and Kerr haven't really been working as the duo. And it was, you know, it was Leupolz in the middle who won the ball back to start off the move for Kirby's first goal, and it was again, you know, that Kerr and Kirby link up that we have seen so much that really killed Bayern to start off with, and then it just turned into a counter-attacking game.
Yeah, and right as you say there, the introduction of Sophie Ingle being back in their midfield position, I think that really allowed both G and Leupolz to kind of focus on providing that possession further up the pitch. So I think that when we have that double pivot against teams like Bayern and Wolfsburg, we saw how Engen kind of ran the system and how Darmann was doing that in the first leg. But having Ingles there kind of gave them a bit more space to open up and push forward. And as you say, it was how that movement was started off for the first goal. But kind of all credit to Sam Kerr, because she was the one in that build-up for Kirby's first goal who was kind of pulling defenders away. She was absolutely aware of where to be positionally and spatially. And she's such a slippery player to mark in the box. I think Bayern really were at odds in that defence to understand how to mark. And I think that kind of is a running theme for all the goals that we scored. because it seems that there's some kind of defensive disarray that happens, and that kind of was intentional, obviously, from Emehe's choice of squad. So that first goal was great, but then obviously there was a response from Bayern, and to have that screamer going, you kind of had to think that there's really not much that Ann-Kathrine Berger could have done to stop that, because it was just an amazing, amazing goal.
Yeah, the quality of the strike, like Hannah Glass in the first leg scoring the winner, there was, you know, you can't put anything on Berger. I think there would be some disappointment from the Chelsea defence. You know, they've obviously pinpointed their set pieces, defending set pieces as a weakness against Bayern's strengths. So they packed the box, but there was no one on the area to close down Zadrazil, who scored the goal. And I think that was, you know, if you were to look at one, you know, we're not going to be negative here, but if you want to look at one, you know, the one weakness from that Chelsea game, it was the fact that, you know, there was that defensive slip in a goal. The build-up really could have been prevented. But then, like you said, Chelsea then benefited from a, you know, defensive problems of their own, because G's goal, you know, her free kick was, you know, it wasn't good, but no one closed her down. They let her take the shot the second time round, and it just managed to squeeze through. And I think you have to say, as good as they were, you know, like every good team, Chelsea did ride their luck at times as well.
Yeah, but absolutely. And as you mentioned, with that Drew goal, which made it 2-1 to Chelsea, it was from a quite poor free kick, but then no one really responded from Bayern to see who would get to that ball first. And you didn't really expect that ball to go in the far post. As you said, there is an element of luck. I don't think anyone thought it would be like that. And when you watch the replay in slow motion, you just see how it goes exactly straight through the Bayern defence. No one's really reacting. They just kind of all watch the ball go in. And I think that kind of worked wonders for Chelsea's confidence, because before that, when it was 1-1, it was all Bayern. They were, you know, they were smelling blood in the water, and they knew that Chelsea were there for the taking. Chelsea needed something to get them back on top, and that goal came at the perfect time.
Yeah, it was quite, you know, it wasn't great to see how Chelsea's head dropped after the equaliser, you know, forgetting that they still had, it was about 60 minutes left to, you know, get at least the goal that they needed. But they went straight into, you know, almost, they looked panicked at times, and it allowed, like you said, Bayern to get in control of the game. But then G put Chelsea back on top, and it meant that Bayern had to, you know, if they wanted to win, you know, in normal time, they had to push as well, and it opened up a really good countering match. But it wasn't until, you know, the final 5-6 minutes that someone went ahead again, and it was Chelsea. And I'll admit, I don't, you know, when they got this set piece near the edge of the Bayern area, I didn't, you know, with a crossing opportunity, I didn't think anything would come from it, because, you know, Chelsea had been sending their corners and their free kick straight into the hands of the goalkeeper. It was like making it far too easy for her. But Carter switched up her delivery for this one, and, you know, it was more driven. And then there was Pernille Harder too. You know, Bayern had left her unmarked again. You know, you're talking about the defensive. How do you leave someone of Harder's ability, of Harder's quality, and know what she can do? They've seen what she can do for Wolfsburg against them over the years. You know, to leave her unmarked to get that header, you know, as good as it was from Chelsea's point of view, you again have to look at Bayern.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, I said before that there was a running theme of defensive disarray. That's another example. I guess perhaps you could kind of say that they probably weren't expecting that type of delivery from Jess Carter, because all across it before that were quite, you know, they weren't as pacey. They were a little bit more flat. She kind of switched things up, as you said there. And I did think it kind of took them by surprise, because it's absolutely no way you leave Pernille Harder by herself in the box. I think they were caught out and they didn't know how to respond as quickly. And of course, we all know how Pernille Harder is on the floor in terms of dribbling ability, but also in the air. And and the pace on that cross kind of made it quite simple for her. But again, obviously, you have to question why Bayern were caught out so much and why they had been caught out during the game, because that element of their defensive capabilities really is what lost them the game.
Yeah, I think from a Bayern point of view, they will have to look at those, I'd say those three moments, because the fourth, which we'll get onto in a second, they can, you know, you can excuse their defending there because it was, you know, trying to throw everything at Chelsea. But those, you know, the first three goals that Chelsea scored, it really doesn't shine well on Bayern. But, you know, Bayern had their chances even after Chelsea, after Harder's goal, you know, and there were moments where it felt like watching the game that, you know, Bayern were going to win it. There was that ball into the box. Off the top of my head, I can't remember who shot, but it was saved by Berger. And then and then followed in that needed Eriksen clearing it off the line, and the cross was blocked. And again, looking at how Chelsea, you know, rode their luck at times. But you've got to look at Berger, who was excellent, and like we've said, she couldn't do anything about Bayern's goal. Eriksen, you know, came back in at the perfect moment. Carter was brilliant, not just setting up the goal. Defensively, she was great. Like we said, Charles, I think it was what their performance deserved, to have that bit of luck. And then, you know, there goes Kirby to win it, to, you know, put the tie like beyond all doubt.
Yeah, and I think it's quite touching that Kirby got that final goal, and also the first, because I think she, above anyone else in this team, deserves happiness and deserves to win all the trophies in the world, everything she's gone through. And you could see how much it meant to her at full time. You could see how much it meant to Emma Hayes. They were in tears. And I would be lying if I said I wasn't in tears myself, because it was quite an emotional experience. As you mentioned, there were times where you thought, oh, Bayern got this. There were times after that screamer where I just thought, oh no, you know, this is it, they've got us in a chokehold position. But Chelsea got a bit of luck and it just set them down the right path, and it was a crazy game. It was a crazy emotional experience, and I'm just so happy to see us progressing through to the final, because that's exactly what we were saying before the season started. Every single Chelsea player in pre-season interviews were talking about the Champions League, so they've got it now. They've got to really work on it, because they're facing Barcelona, and it's not a two-leg experience. You got to get it right the first time around.
Yeah, and just before we get onto Barcelona, I think, like you, I was, you know, quite worked up watching, even when, you know, because there were times where I didn't think that Chelsea would do it, and then when Harder scored and the big celebrations, my mind went back to, you know, Bayern Munich last weekend got a bit of stick for their celebrations, and I didn't kind of agree with the criticism that they were getting, because you would celebrate a big win. But then there was a moment just where it was like, you know, Chelsea celebrating the third goal, but there was still what ended up being 8-9 minutes that Bayern could have, you know, won it. And then obviously we had Sam Kerr's miss before Kirby's winner. But it just reminds me of, you know, going back to 2012 when the Chelsea men's team won the Champions League. There was, you know, Gary Neville said it on commentary that, you know, it's written in the stars, and it feels, given how Chelsea have got through this tournament and, you know, the lows, you know, is their name on the trophy. And like you said, you know, it's now a big game in the final, and they do only have one game to get it right against, you know, probably the best team in Europe, certainly attacking wise, Barcelona, who knocked out PSG. They won 2-1 on Sunday morning. And before we get into that, why are you scheduling Champions League semi-finals to kick off at 11 o'clock in the morning? You know, that's not...
On a Sunday. Yeah. On a Sunday, everything. It's like, no one's awake at that time. If you really want to maximise coverage and exposure, that's not the time to do it, and not that calibre of game.
Yeah, and for people who, you know, might have had a Sunday line, they might have gone for a walk Sunday morning, they missed they missed a good game. It was Lique Martins who got both goals for Barcelona. The first, they really, I'd say they exploited what looked like a high-ish line from PSG. And it was a really good finish first time. It was quite a simple goal in terms of, you know, pass into space, goal and score. But that was worked really well. And then Martin's second was a tap-in from close range after good work from Carolina Graham-Hansen. PSG did get one back through Marie-Antoinette Cototo after, you know, Barcelona failed to clear a corner. But it was just, you know, we spoke about it the past couple of weeks. It was another case of, you know, just PSG just not being, you know, good enough against, you know, one of the big teams.
Yeah, and it's a shame because there was a bit of a feeling that once they'd got past Lyon, not that they were invincible, but you would have thought that they'd gotten to the stage where, you know, where they'd be able to face that psychological element of it, which is something that seems to have cropped up. And even without any fans in the stadium and still knowing that they'd done that against Lyon, they struggled again against Barcelona. And I guess a bit of it, you kind of have to say, well, that's fair enough. We know how good Barcelona are. We know they've scored over 100 goals this season. But it almost seemed like they weren't confident enough, and Barcelona kind of capped on that and were very strong in an attacking sense, but also defensively. Like you mentioned, all the goals were scored in the first half. PSG just needed one more. They didn't have that belief to think, okay, we could maybe get a, you know, a penalty, or maybe we could get a crossing or something like that. But it just, it was never there. And I never really believed in the same way I believed that Chelsea were going to come back and win the game.
Yeah, like you said, you know, there was hope from the neutrals that PSG would use that Lyon win as momentum. And even with 1-1 after the first leg, it was, you know, yes, Barcelona had the upper hand because of the away goal, but there was still that hope that PSG would do something. And like you said, they just needed the one goal. You know, even at 2-1 down, they had 45 minutes to get one goal and really put the pressure on Barcelona because of the away goals. But it was, you know, Barcelona had the majority of the big chances in the second half. And again, like you said, with Chelsea, there was always the feeling that Chelsea would get over the line. But with this game, it just, I don't want to dismiss Barcelona too much, but it felt more of, like I said, PSG not being good enough against a big team. Because Barcelona missed their chances, you know. If they were on their game, they could have thrashed PSG, looking at, again, the second half. And it does, you know, it sets up a massive final. You know, it's a couple of weeks away now, but it's, you know, looking at both the teams, it's probably the final that most neutrals will have wanted, Chelsea against Barcelona. And you know, how can Chelsea cope with the Barcelona attack that is so brilliant?
Yeah, and it's quite obviously a tight comparison, because, you know, both teams are quite good attackingly and defensively. I think Barcelona probably had the easy semi-final. But I just do feel like there's a little bit of concern about whether Mahrez can get it right the first time. I know she's been waiting for this moment for 9 years now, you know, almost a decade in terms of preparing. But you think about the two-legged experiences we've had over the last month or so, and in each one there's been a running theme, which is that the first leg is absolutely, like, horrific, and the mistakes and everything. And then the second leg, it's like a whole new Chelsea. It's like, you know, what is this? Where did you guys come from? And while she may have had a week in between those games, here she only has 15 minutes in terms of a half-time break. So if she needs to turn the game around, she's not going to have the same amount of time as she did in those previous games. That's the only thing that concerns me. Chelsea need to be on the game from the get-go. There's just no room for error.
Yeah, because like you said, even in those wins in the first leg against Wolfsburg and Atletico Madrid, there were there were the areas. You had Sophie Ingle's red card that really put Chelsea up against it from the start, and they were dominated against Wolfsburg in the first leg. And, you know, Barcelona showed against PSG the strength that they have in attack. We all know what they can do, but, you know, if they don't play Oshoala, they play Jenny Hermoso. If you've got the options of Hansen and Martins on either flank, you've got the defensive strength, you've got the midfield, you know, basically all of their team, they're the complete unit. And it was that unit and that, I think, belief in themselves that got them, you know, through a potentially sticky second half against PSG. And it was almost a Leon, I won't say arrogance, but confidence in themselves that we are better than you, we will get through this. And, you know, if they take that confidence into the final, if Chelsea don't get it right, you know, and luck isn't on their side, it could be, you know, it could be heartbreak.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing you have to really think about. PSG obviously weren't able to do it because this just seems to be that psychological element, but you've got to wonder how that's going to affect this game between Barcelona and Chelsea, because I think Barcelona, pretty much being at the level they are, have had the run of the game domestically and also in the Champions League. So I feel like Chelsea have had to struggle a bit more. You know, they've had games like the Brighton game, they've had low form across first leg in the Champions League. And maybe that makes them a bit more resilient to anything happening in the final. But at the same time, I do feel like Barcelona, having defeated Lyon, you know, PSG, the team that put out Lyon, they probably have a bit more confidence going into the game. And, you know, Chelsea still have a lot to do in the league, whereas I feel like Barcelona pretty much kind of secured it for themselves. They've got a game actually this Wednesday, I think, against Tottenham, and they've got to make sure they win, because, you know, whilst they were winning away in the Champions League, Man City were winning away in the WSL. So there's a lot still to figure out, I think.
Yeah, like I said, Barcelona have run away with the league. They've won all 25 of the games. They've got 3 games in hand. They're like 14 points clear. But like you said, Chelsea, although they were celebrating in the Champions League, they were also dropping to second in the WSL, because Man City comfortably beat Birmingham 4-0 to go a point clear of Chelsea, who, as you said, play against Tottenham on Wednesday. It was really a really straightforward win for Man City. We all expected it to happen. But there was just a moment of sadness for Man City with Chloe Kelly's injury, and it looked to be quite a bad one. She was tackled and won a penalty. And even after replays, I couldn't quite tell whether it was an ankle or a knee. But whatever it was, she was in a lot of pain and she had to be taken off on a stretcher. And, you know, I'm not a medical expert, but I'd wonder what that does. I don't think it'll make much of a difference for Man City because they've got one game left. But I do wonder, looking forward to Team GB, what that might change for there. But yeah, Man City really put the pressure on Chelsea. And, you know, again, a couple of weeks ago, I said I looked at Tottenham as the game that Chelsea probably would win out of, or that they wouldn't have any problems with between Tottenham and Reading their last two games. But after the result and the performance that they had put in against Bayern, you know, and the pressure, can they handle it this week against Tottenham?
Yeah, and you've got to hope that they can, because, you know, as you mentioned, there's that pressure of Man City being above them now. And although Tottenham is probably the easier fixture, but they then have to kind of think about playing that game against Reading, because that's probably a much harder game. And they've got to keep one eye on what's happening around them, because even though Chloe Kelly's been injured, Man City still have an absolute embarrassment of attacking options to pick from. So it's kind of Chelsea's to lose, but there's still that element of kind of maybe being a bit drawn into what's going on in Champions League. There's a lot more for them to focus on than Man City have. And I think that might play into their hands. But what I'm kind of more excited about is what's happening in the last of the Champions League spots with Arsenal, because I think Joe Montemurro has really, really turned things around from maybe about 6, 7, even 8 games ago. They've just been on this run and they've finally secured a victory against Everton, and it seems like they've pretty much called that spot their own.
Yeah, again, we've spoken about Montemurro in the past, and you know he's leaving in what will be a couple of weeks now. His last game will be in the FA Cup once the season is over. And there was a time where they didn't look like they would get in Champions League. And I was reading an interview with him in the Times over the weekend about, you know, he admitted that, you know, everything's fallen into place with players returning from injury. And again, we've spoken about Jordan Nobbs in the past and her importance. But it was also, you know, the team's, not personal lives, but, you know, the state the world is in right now and everything going on with COVID and, you know, the toll that has on, you know, people privately. And he alluded that, you know, really, you know, played a role in the period where Arsenal looked down and out. But as you said, they've pretty much secured Champions League football for next season. They needed an injury time penalty to win against Everton, but it keeps them 3 points clear of Man United with just the one game to play, and the only way that Man United can overtake them is if they win next weekend. Arsenal lose to Aston Villa, but they also need a goal difference swing of 27. So, you know, although it's not 100% guaranteed for Arsenal, it's 99.9 blah 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 secured, and but it still adds that little bit of drama. And then there's the drama at the bottom of the table. You know, Bristol City lost to Man United, Aston Villa and West Ham faced each other and drew, and Birmingham lost to Man City. It means that Bristol City are 2 points from off safety, and they play a potentially difficult game against Brighton next weekend, which they need a win. You know, West Ham look fairly good because of goal difference. They're 3 points ahead of Bristol City with 35 better goal difference. Birmingham aren't completely safe because, you know, their season just, it's just one massive, you know, like thriller drama story. You know, it was announced on Thursday or Friday that, you know, they're going to be punished because they fielded an ineligible player against Reading a few weeks back. You know, so now there's the fear or the speculation that if they get a points deduction, one, how many points would it be? Would it be enough to lift them below Bristol City? And again, as we go into the final week of the season next weekend, you know, I personally don't give Bristol City a chance. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to beat Brighton, which they need to do. Do you give them, you know, are you slightly more optimistic for them, or do you think that's it?
No, I pretty much agree. I think you've absolutely nailed it. It's just a bit too much for them to overcome, and they left it a bit too late. I was quite interested in that Aston Villa West Ham match, and I think a draw was absolutely not what Villa wanted, and West Ham obviously have secured their own safety, so it's all kind of been thrown into the wind. But I do think that you're right in saying that. I think Bristol City are just not going to be able to push past that mountain, and obviously, you know, Birmingham aren't totally safe either. You know, they're probably going to get a lot of trouble for things that are happening off the field. But we still kind of don't know what's going on with that issue with Birmingham. And obviously there's been an issue with players itself and things that are happening with the board. So you kind of have to hold your breath and see what happens with that, because if that didn't happen, if any deductions or punishments didn't happen, we're still kind of looking at a bit of a difficult situation between Birmingham and Brighton and Bristol.
Yeah, like you said, we don't really know what's going to happen, but what we do know is that next weekend is going to be, it's really an end to the season. We've got, like I said, we've got the title race, we've got Arsenal just needing that point to confirm it, and we've got the relegation battle, and we'll be here again next week to review all of that. But until then, thanks once again for listening. As we said, it's the 10th episode, so thank you to all that have been listening for these 10 episodes. Again, like I said, hopefully next week's a good one, and we'll see you then.